on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, KPP Financial President, Financial Advisor Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Thursday edition of InvestTalk. It is July 23rd, 2015. Appreciate you being with me. Because you're here today, that also means that you have more than a passing interest in managing your money or protecting it or growing it or looking for opportunities to make it grow. So I appreciate you being with us. We try to answer the questions that are important to you. And of course, we always answer our 24-hour listener line. And you can talk to us live right now, Monday through Friday. The 24-hour listener line is whenever we're not on the show. We're live Monday through Friday, 4 to 5 Pacific time. You can also ask questions via Twitter at KPP Financial. That's at KPP Financial, which is, of course, our Twitter ID. Or you can get a note directly to me by clicking on Contact Steve, or to Justin by clicking on Contact Justin on InvestTalk.com and send us an email. You can do that. I see our job here at InvestTalk as helping you make better financial decisions. To do that, you need good data. The real facts, not the media hype, not what people think, but some good, solid information, facts. You need to have some perspective of what's going on in the world. Today grows out of yesterday, and history tells us that conditions tend to repeat themselves. That's why you hear me talking about cycles every so often. I try not to fall in love with cycles because they're imperfect, but but history does tend to repeat, and it's nice to know the background of those kinds of cycles, the seasons that the market has. You know, summertime is, you know, the summer doldrums. There's usually a pullback. There's usually a rally from a low sometime made during the summer or even early fall. I mean, those are typical things that happen, and they've happened so often that they become, you know, part of the landscape of investing. We know that summertime is usually a tougher time. It's statistics. It's facts. Take a look at them. You don't have to believe me, but it's true. Summer doesn't mean summer's always down, by the way, everybody. That's not what I say. Matter of fact, over long periods, over the last 100 years, summer's always up. But they're all, you know, if you look at a long term, but they're always up much slower than the winter. Winter's up more. So that's why they call it, you know, summer doldrums, that kind of thing. Anyways, well, hopefully we can give you some useful learnings, useful information about finances. As you know, your parents didn't teach you. They didn't teach me. So there's a lot of money choices you have to make and you have to live with all your life. So, you know, all this means is you have great intentions, but you try to learn more. Spend some time learning more. And if you're hearing me, you are trying to learn more and spend time learning more. So let me help you if I can. I want to help. It's kind of fun. Kind of fun to ask questions and answer questions. Okay, since I said that, maybe we ought to go ahead and... by the way, I'd love to hear any of your mistakes, too. I know you don't like to share them. I don't like sharing mine. I know that. Bless me. Trust me, I make plenty of mistakes. But you are completely anonymous on the phone, unless someone recognizes your voice. Remember, you can talk to us live 4 to 5 Pacific time on InvestTalk, or in between times, just leave the question. Here's our first question of the day from our 24-hour listen line, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, this is Jim from San Jose. I went to an estate sale, and I found a bunch of stock certificates, like 40 or 50 of them dating back from 60s and 70s from the person that passed away. Are those still good? I bought it in a trunk with a bunch of other stuff, and someone told me they're still good. I think I just have to turn them into a broker. I'm not sure. Can you give me a little information on that? Thank you.
Yes, the stock certificates are still good. The answer would be yes. There's always a but, though. However, or but, whether they're worth anything is a real question. Because you can have a bunch of stock certificates in companies that are bankrupt. They're worthless. Not uncommon. Now, if you're telling me, I have a bunch of stock certificates for, you know, IBM, or AT&T. Yeah, they're worth a lot going back that far because there's probably stock splits and everything else. Now, how do you figure out? How do you cash them in? You got to go to a broker. How do you know if there's worth anything? He has to do research, and most of the times the brokers are going to charge you to research those stock certificates. But they can find out about the company, whether it's worth anything. And I'll be honest, most of the time, those stock certificates that people find in the attic or in a trunk are worthless most of the time. They're pretty neat looking, but they're not worth anything. But I would get it checked out. I would. Good question, though. If you ever come across a stock certificate, don't throw it away. Try to see if you can do your own research on it. Many times, see, what happens is it's not IBM, right? It's just ABC company. And that ABC company could have went out of business, and chances are high it did. But it also could have been purchased by IBM or AT&T or Chevron. It could be purchased by and folded in. And now that certificate was never turned in to collect what it was purchased. Or maybe they purchased it with IBM stock. So each 100 shares of XYZ company is worth 5 shares of IBM stock. So you don't know. You have to do some forensic research on that. Okay? So what happened in the market today was not a very good day. Just was not. It's been down. It's really interesting, I think. It's really interesting because we are still in what looked like the NASDAQ was breaking out, and trying to drag the S&P and the Dow with it. And so the NASDAQ broke above to a new high, and the S&P and Dow were just right there until about 4 days ago when they turned over. The Dow is not near as close as the S&P. The S&P was very close to a breakout, but didn't quite make it. NASDAQ broke out, and now is rolling down a little bit. We've seen this happen all year long. That's what's going on. The Dow was down 119 points today. The NASDAQ down 25. The S&P down 12. Just the way it is. When it comes to building college funds, planning for retirement, creating estate plans, there is plenty for opportunities for serious missteps, okay? Plenty of them. So we're going to talk about that. High impact financial planning decisions. And that's going to be a main talk about. Consumers are spending. Everybody's talking about this. Consumers are not spending. Depends on how you look at it. So I want to look at it a little bit differently. Jobless claims are lowest since 1973. Lowest since 1973. So why aren't we feeling better? And what does this really mean for, if this is so low and the economy is doing so well, why is our stock market it's flat for the year? What's going on? Why? I'll have some answers for that. And we know all about the Chinese collapse last month, the 30% in the stock market in like 4 to 6 weeks after it went up 100, 150% in a year. And the Chinese made huge steps to intervene. They're going to be good or bad for the market, for the Chinese market. Do you know how many measures they took to intervene, by the way? I do. I'm going to give you those numbers. Chinese market's been 6 up days in a row. Are you confident in that? I'll tell you what, I would not touch that market with a 10-foot pole, with monopoly money, or any other kind of currency. I wouldn't touch it right now. And I'm going to go over the reasons why I wouldn't. So that's what happened. Today the market was down. We've had, 3 or 4 days in a row down. Is it accelerating to the downside? No. We actually had some pretty decent earnings news. But you know what's so funny about the earnings news is the expectations were so low. Everybody lowered them. All the experts lowered them so far that it was obvious that they're going to beat expectations and everybody's going to be all happy about them beating expectations. But does that mean we're actually looking good? Are the earnings numbers nominally much better than they were last quarter before, a year ago quarter? Or are they just better than expectations? And I want you to learn, you are being kind of massaged by the experts, by them telling you how much they think earnings are going to be, then lowering it, They always start off real high to make you feel like, oh, now this coming quarter is going to be really good. And then they kind of lower all the expectations. And then they report the earnings in the next quarter, and they beat the lowered expectations. So it makes you feel like, well, they said it was going to be good, and look at that. It turned out to be good. You're being manipulated by information. So try to step back and say, wait a minute. What's the real facts here? It's hard. Trust me, it's hard. Okay, to do this thing right, I need your input, everybody. Bring your questions. Do you have an opinion you'd like to share with me, or maybe a stock or a fund or an ETF you'd like to talk about? What is your overall strategy? Do you have too many mutual funds or ETFs or stocks? Is there a duplication or overlap in your portfolio maybe that you don't know about? 888-99-CHARGE, how to reach me right now. 888-992-4278. We're going to go talk to Gene, who's in North Carolina. How are you doing, Gene?
Hey, Steve. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I was listening to your program on Friday, and I think you spoke about different aspects of credit cards. Mm-hmm. And I had a question about business credit cards as opposed to regular consumer or personal credit cards.
Okay.
I had heard that business credit cards are actually governed by a different set of rules, the Uniform Commercial Code, that provides you actually with weaker consumer protection versus credit cards for individuals. Do you know anything about that?
I know a little bit about that, but not a great deal. Consumers, individuals, have more protections than businesses.
Right.
And they have more avenues of getting to redress problems than businesses.
Right.
Okay? But as far as how much more protection and how much more robust it is, I don't know.
Yeah, okay? For example, what I heard is like for consumers, if you have a regular credit card, if it's stolen and you report it in a timely manner, you're only liable for $50 or something of that nature.
Most of the time, you're not liable for anything.
They
will just cover it for you. That $50 is not worth it to them. Yeah.
Where for businesses, there's more. You have more liability. You're assumed more responsibility, and so you're liable for more damages, I guess.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised at all. I'm not an expert on that, but Gene, I wouldn't be surprised, and I would tend to agree that that's probably true. But again, I'm not the expert. That's not my bailiwick. I just know that from being in business for some time. I have both a business card and a consumer, private card, so I know.
Gene, I've seen a lot of the credit card companies push offers for new business credit cards versus more than regular consumer credit cards, and that's probably why, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Appreciate the call, Gene.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Okay, let's go to Joe in Modesto. How you doing, Joe?
Hello, Steve. I'm glad to talk to you. I've talked to you before. I listen to your show almost every day.
Thank you.
Say, I've got a couple of questions for you, if I might. They won't take long.
Okay. Go.
The first question is, I'd like to short the stock SH, and I'm wondering if I have come up with the opposite of the inverse of the S&P 500.
Yes, the SH is the opposite of the S&P 500. Yes.
I'm kidding on that one. I wouldn't short that stock. But the question I have is, I'm coming up with my investment strategy, and I'm thinking about my entrance and exit plans.
Uh-huh.
And there's two scenarios that I thought of. And one is when the 50-day moving chart crosses over the 200 moving day chart on the entrance and the exit. But I'm afraid on the entrance, I might miss out on some profits. And on the exit, I might exit too late.
Then I would shorten up. What I would do on that, Joe, because I'm very familiar with the crossovers, if you're going to use the 200-day moving average, which is the one-year moving average, which is a good one, use a short crossover, like a 20-day. 20-day crossing over the 200, not a 50, because 50 is a bit too long. It could be pretty long before it makes that crossover. So I would suggest a shorter crossover moving average. Joe, I'm sorry, got to go. Appreciate the call. Thank you. I have a date with our listeners in around San Jose. I'll be meeting people there. I hope you can make it. That's July 23rd, everybody.
Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. The chairwoman of the Federal Reserve repeated again recently that the Fed is on track to raise short-term interest rates later this year. What higher interest rates would mean to you? That's our talking point For Friday's podcast, we hope you'll join us then.
888-992-4278. So what are some of the financial mistakes and why we make them? What are some of the worst ones and why we make them? Paying off debt with savings. That should surprise you, shouldn't it? Shouldn't you surprise? You know, the debt is costing 19% on a credit card, and you're going to take your savings out and pay it off. Well, there are certain savings you shouldn't touch, and that is like your 401k and your IRA to pay off debt. You shouldn't touch that. That savings, those 401ks and IRAs, just to pay off debt because you'll have a tax penalty. And, you know, you need to pay off that debt. That is not even the issue. But you need to pay it off with your ongoing expenses, your ongoing income. Okay? Not you know, just willy-nilly. And my problem is people pay off the debt, but they don't change their habits. And then they go right back into debt again. Not building an emergency fund. Not having a budget or a plan. Or how about this? No health insurance. I have a relative who has no health insurance. And I think that's just insane. How about not investing? Because the only way you're going to make money is you save your IRA, 401ks, and you invest some of that money. Doesn't have to be. I'm not talking about necessarily in the stock market. You buy rental properties or investment properties of some kind. You could do other things with it. I mean, those are some of the things you can really work on, okay? Paying off bad debt that you don't have, saving a little money, try to control what you're spending, try to invest some money somewhere for long term. Don't take money out of your IRAs and 401ks until you actually retire. Things like that, those are not rocket science things. Those are just common sense things, and many people don't do that. So that's not you. You're listening to the show. You need to make those kind of common sense decisions. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. You've seen the markets falling, 4 days in a row now? But after being up many days in a row, but we're just still in that rut. We're still in it. Been in it all year. Are we ever going to break out? Yes, we are. Why are we in a rut? And my speculation is it's because we're in the summertime, number one, and number two, because we're anticipating interest rate rises. So, okay, let's get back to listening line calls. 888-99-CHART, here's a call that came in earlier.
Hey, Steve and Justin, this is Chris from Mobile. I had a quick question about CyberArk, ZYBR. We're going to take a small position in it. I'd like to get some exposure in the cybersecurity realm. And I want to get your take as well, just on the cybersecurity industry. It seems really hot right now, and in my opinion, in the next 2 to 5 years, I really don't see it going anywhere, just really going up, in my opinion. So I want to get your all's thoughts on CyberArk, ZYBR, and cybersecurity. Thank you.
Okay, this is CyberArk Software Limited. It's an Israeli provider of network security software focused on protecting privileged accounts for commercial enterprises. It IPO'd at $16 a share on September 24th, 2014, okay, last year. Right now, today, it's at $61. From 16 to 61, everybody. This is a hot area of the market. They're making money. They're going to make 43 cents this year per share. They're going to make 60 cents next year. 60 cents for a $60 stock. That's 100 PE. It's growing about 80, 90% sales a quarter in the last couple of quarters. That's why it's getting that kind of number. That's why. I would be very, very careful because of the price. This is the kind of stock, and we've talked about this many times, that if there is any disappointment in the sales, even though the sales growing, for instance, if the sales grow 50% instead of 80% like it did the last two quarters, it grows 50%, the stock will fall, even though it's still growing very fast, simply because people are used to 80%. They want to see 80% or more now. Can it produce that? Well, people are looking for it. It's a $1.9 billion company with only about $100 million of sales. So it's a 19-to-1 price-to-sales ratio, which is extremely high. So this would be a very speculative, be very careful. From a chart point of view, it looks like it's bouncing from support and going to head back up to test the recent highs, which were probably around $75 a share. Good luck with it. SYBR. I do like the area, but the whole area is kind of expensive right now. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. We're going to talk about consumers and their spending habits within this next half hour. We're also going to talk about the jobless claims, which are the lowest they've been since 1973. How come we don't feel better about that? Lowest they've been since 1973. We're going to talk about that. And the concerns I have about the Chinese intervention in their stock market. You know how many different things they tried to do to stop the fall? The government. They tried 40 different things. They took 40 different measures to prop up the market. What does that tell you about the market? Is it that weak that they had to step in, and or else it would have, what? Coming up next half hour, InvestTalk Personal, finding new ways to cut costs in retirement. I hope you'll be here. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley. You can reach me right now at 888-99-CHART.
Part of the InvestTalk experience is visiting our website, investtalk.com. And one of the reasons for a visit is Steve's market commentary. Just go to investtalk.com and scroll down to his market commentary.
888-992-4278. We're going to go talk to Steve in San Jose. How you doing, Steve?
Hi, Steve. This is Steve. I enjoy your show very much.
Thank you.
I have a question about CPLP. I think that it seems like its dividend is very high. Mm-hmm. But I look at the income. I'm kind of wondering how they can pay out so much dividend. So I would like to know your thoughts.
How they're doing it is they're doing it because they're issuing more shares. They've issued shares in a lot more shares in 2013. They issued more shares in 2014, and they've already issued more shares this year. And they're issuing those shares, so they're giving back to the shareholders part of their own money. That is not sustainable. This is CPLP, everybody, Capital Product Partners. Greece-based company provides crude oil, petroleum products, fuel transportation services with a fleet of 30 vessels. They are making money, Steve. They're profitable. They're making 43 cents this year, and that's up big from last year, and they're going to make 53 cents next year, according to the estimates. So they're paying 11.6% dividend yield on an $8 stock. Well, they do have $1.14 cash flow. So not only do they have money coming in to help pay for that, but 11% on $8.10, that's like a 85 to 87 cents per share is what they're paying out. Well, how can you pay 87 when you only make 43? Well, you issue more shares and you give some of that money back. That's how they're doing it. But I don't want to give you the impression they're a bad stock or a bad company. They're not bad looking, really, overall. I just don't like the fact that they need to cut the dividend. Instead of cutting the dividend, they recently increased the dividend. I don't understand that. And management doesn't own hardly any stock. Steve, I probably would stay away from this because it's a little bit scary.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah, that's what I was kind of scared.
Appreciate
the other
call.
Question I have, if you have time, is about interest rate.
Sure.
I'm wondering, as the Fed start to go raise interest rate, do you think that the short-term rate will actually, at one point in time, be higher than the long-term rate, maybe at the beginning of the interest rate increase cycle?
It could be. But I don't think so, but it could be because the long rates are creeping up right now also, anticipating that the short rate will go up. If that did happen, Steve, that would be a bad sign for the economy. If the short-term rates were higher than the long-term rates, that inversion is usually the precursor of a recession. So it's something I watch. I watch very closely the interest rate spread and how healthy it is. That's what that means. If the short-term rates are a little bit lower than the intermediate short rates, then the long-term rates are a little lower, and they maintain that from low to short-term to high to long-term, and that spread between them should stay pretty steady. And if you start seeing the short-term rates creeping up on the long-term rates, that's a warning sign. When the short-term rates is higher than the long-term rates, that is very consistent of a recession coming.
I see. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call, Steve. Appreciate it. Yeah, that's one of the things you really, as an investor, you need to kind of watch. You know, part of your job is understanding how the economics work, and, you know, trying to anticipate. And, of course, you do realize everybody else is trying to do the same thing. So you got to be, you know, you got to be understand. You got to understand these things. It's difficult. Consumers are spending. There's been a lot of angst that the consumer is not comfortable, that they're not spending very much money. Well, that's, yeah, and then economic numbers, remember the retail sales last week were lower for the most recent month than the month before, and therefore the consumers are not spending. In actuality, the consumers are spending. They're not being that frugal. They're only saving about 5% of their income. Now, everybody's worried because even the first quarter, the spending was the slowest rate since the recession. However, when you look at it a different way, consumers are actually spending more in nominal terms, actual money, in relation to the GDP than they were a year ago. Okay? The problem we have is that they're spending their money, but their incomes have been stagnant for years. So even though that people think consumers are not doing their part, they actually are doing their part. They just don't have a lot of money because they don't have a lot of increase in salary. So they can't. And also now they're not tapping into the home equity loan market like they used to. They're not spending more. They are spending more than they have, but not as much. So they're just not spending more like they were in 2006, 2007, 2008 when they were borrowing money against their house and spent. See, that's why it doesn't feel right. They are spending the money they make. They're just not spending more. And so what we need is a stronger job market that raise salaries. Then, of course, the Federal Reserve will worry about inflation and then, you know, whole different cycle. But consumers need more money for them to spend it, because they are spending what they have. They have a 5% savings rate, which is not the lowest. It's not the highest in the last 30 years, but not the lowest. So they're saving, but they need to save. They should be saving. They actually should be saving more. Maybe I can tell you from factual information, is that the wages are not growing fast enough for them to spend more. So we're going to have to get used to what they are spending. That's what I'm saying. Just get used to it. This is the way it is for the time being. Time for InvestTalk Personal, the daily choices we make that can have lasting financial impact. When it comes to time to retire, there's a chance that most people will have to draw up a new budget. We all know that. You need to conserve your resources in retirement. That money has to last for many years. And even if retirement is a ways away, far away, it might be a good idea to start saving more now and find new ways to cut your expenses. Saving more now will always make you better prepared, always. So why not try it, especially as you're getting older and older? That doesn't mean all of your extra cash has to go into savings. I'm not saying that, but is now when your highest earning age is between 45 and 65 years old. That's where you're going to earn the most money in your career. That's when you need to start saving the most money. Maybe you could start by listing all your bills and figure out which ones you can trim. Maybe you don't need that 100 cable stations. Maybe you don't need all those, you know, high-speed internet fancy stuff. Maybe you don't need that. Do you use it? You know, so there's just find ways to try to save more. That's a good idea. You know, the article I was reading said, well, why don't you learn to grow your own food? I just don't think that's practical here in the United States. You know, grow your own food. Grow some of your own food. For me, I've tried to do that. I'm not very good at it. I'm just not very good at it. I love to garden. I like to be outside and do the stuff. But I'm not good at growing my own food or growing food. I can grow lemons and oranges. I even have trouble with oranges, so that's how bad I am. Anyways, that's InvestTalk Personal. There's a link to AARP.org article under our talking point link to investtalk.com if you want to read up on some other things. 888-99-CHART, that's our number.
The first step is to learn how much risk you feel comfortable with. Then Steve and Justin can tell you if your current portfolio matches up. Our free risk analysis tool is there to help. It asks simple questions and takes just about 5 minutes or even less. It's there for you on investtalk.com.
Hey, this is Josh calling from Seattle. I was curious about an energy stock, a TGA, Transglobe Energy. I've had it for about 8 months now, and it's did pretty well for a while, and now it's taken a beating in the last month. I'm just wondering if this is something you would be comfortable with holding for like 5 years, you know, whatever, how long it takes for oil to recover. Financial shape looks good to pay their dividend and all that kind of thing. There's some geopolitical risk, I know. Just want your basic thoughts about this one for the next 5 to 10 years long term. Thanks a lot. Enjoy the show. Bye.
I can tell you that I probably wouldn't think of this stock as a 5-10 year investment because it's so small. It's a $220 million company. It's a very small company. Transglobal Energy, TGA. It's out of Canada. Canadian company engaged in the exploration and production of crude oil and natural gas in Egypt and Yemen. So here it is in some of the most difficult parts of the world, and it's a small company. It's making money. It lost money in 2014, 2 cents a share. It's going to make $1.50 this year and $1.92 next year. So it looks like it's going to make money. But at the same time, sales have been shrinking for the last year. I mean, last quarter, sales fell 62%. That's the problem with a small company. They can be very volatile. On a chart basis, it looks like it's really fine. It has a lot of support between about $38, $39, and today it's at $40.25. Lots and lots of support. So for me, it would be, well, I'll take a shot at it, but if it drops below $38 on any volume of the stock, I'm going to be out. It's not an ExxonMobil or a Chevron or a BP or a Total, you know, a big, huge integrated oil company, which you know can survive almost any oil price out there. This one is not that kind of company. It's much more small. It's much smaller and more speculative, much more speculative. So that's why you got to think about it. At $1.92 with a $2.93 stock, it looks cheap. It really does. But it's going to be kind of rocky, difficult. Okay? Okay, 888-99-CHART. What do you want to talk about? What's on your mind? How about the jobless claims this week? It's the lowest number since 1973, down 26,000 to 255,000. Now, this is July. I want you to remember the month of July. June, July, August, somewhere in there, many times in the month of July, is when the auto industry retools for the new model year. When the auto industry retools, they lay off a lot of people short term. And it causes these numbers to be very unusual, very difficult for the government to adjust them. Because don't ever think that these are actual numbers the government counted and knew exactly how much they were. That's not how it works. So these are seasonally adjusted numbers. Okay, so did the adjustment, did they make the right adjustment? So it's difficult in July, in the summer month of July, because these numbers. Now, having said that, it's still a very good number, right? I mean, it's still very, very good. What does this, why then isn't the market going up? Because the jobless claims, people filing for unemployment have been going down, 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 down for a month, 2 months, 3 months. And if in a larger context, been going down since the Great Recession. So why isn't the market going up? Well, doesn't this kind of, the Federal Reserve's meeting next week. Did you know that? And you know everybody is anticipating a rate increase. I don't think it's coming next week. Matter of fact, I'm pretty sure it's not coming next week. But either it's going to come in September or December. And these kinds of numbers tend to make investors think it's coming closer. And the better these numbers look, the more convinced that they are that the Fed is going to raise rates and raise them fast or faster or maybe not, or maybe they worry about it more. They worry about it. And that means they worry about it now, and the stock market is reflecting that worry, and most of that worry is for the whole year this year is worrying about the Fed and raising rates. That's why I want the Fed to just go ahead and raise the darn rates. Let's get it over with so you can stop worrying about it. Just get it done. I don't think it's going to affect anything, really. You know, especially the first one, two, three rates. They're going to be pretty small. And I can't see the Fed really going out of its way. Remember, my prediction was December, and then it's going to be one and done for a while. They're going to raise the rates and kind of just, okay, historically, when the Fed turns direction to raise rates, they have raised rates four times in a row or more. Okay, four times a row. Okay, so let's say it does that. Let's say they do that. They raise it a quarter point, which has been historically what they've been raising, a quarter point. That means interest rates would be 1% next year if they raise them four times in a row. 1%? Is that going to hurt anything? Is that going to really be impactful? No, probably not. But I don't think they're going to do it really slow. Raise the rate a quarter percent, wait for a couple of more Federal Reserve meetings and see how the economy's doing. If it looks okay, raise it again. I think that's how they're going to do it. I think it's going to be pretty slow, pretty predictable. But the market is worrying about that first one for some reason. Maybe they think the Fed's going to raise a half a percent that first time. I doubt that seriously. But maybe that's what they're worried about. Don't know. What are you worried about? Are you worried about that? It's not something I'm worried about. What will the Fed do? The Fed is going to raise rates. Okay, so let them raise rates. It's okay. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. There's time to get your call in. If you'd like to get your question to me, do it right now. I'm Financial Advisor Steve Peasley, and you can reach me right now at 888-99-CHART, and I'll do my best to answer your question on our show called Invest Talk.
Good advice. Spread your money around. Stick to a well-thought-out plan for carefully divvying up your money so no single calamity will destroy your portfolio. Want to talk about it? 888-99-CHART is how to get through right now. Podcast distribution is made possible each day by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. What's your biggest challenge? Managing your money. Why not talk to Steve about it? 888-99-CHART is our anytime number, or you can get a note directly to him. Just go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Steve.
888-992-4278. Let's talk to Art in Menlo Park. How you doing, Art?
Good. Thanks for taking my call, Steve. Just a quick question. I actually have a primary residence that I was thinking about selling, but I don't really want to pay the over $100,000 in taxes that I'd have to pay, taxes, commissions, and everything else to go with it. I was just wondering what your thought would be to I don't really want to rent it out, but that's probably what I'm probably end up doing. Mm-hmm. And then buying a smaller place because I'm kind of downsizing.
I see.
And going into a smaller place, but I probably have to do it tap into my 401 once I hit 59 and a half because I'm not quite 59 and a half yet.
Right.
But I will be next year. So I was thinking about buying another place if I could. But I just, want to get your thoughts on something like that.
So what that is, Art, is about, what's the best use of all my assets? And the question is how much rent can you get if you hold on to your old property? And how much will that would it be cash flow positive, bringing you in positive money? And would that make sense on a tax basis because you get the write-offs of all the things you get to write off when you have a rental property? And, you know, so it's really the best use of the capital. Would you, if you sold it, because as you point out, if you sold it, you'd have capital, you don't have to pay capital gains tax on the first $250,000 if you're single and $500,000 if you're married. Are you married, Art?
No. It'd be okay. Just $250,000 on that one.
So it'd be only $250,000 for you. Okay, so hurry up and get married, and then you get $500,000.
Right. Yeah, I'd have to get married, but then down the road, I'd probably have to split it all. So,
that's right. Yeah, you wouldn't be any further ahead, and you don't know how much pleasure or aggravation you might have being married. Who knows? But, really, you got to sit down and run the numbers and maybe have someone sit down with you to do that, to kind of make sure you use the best asset. Because, you know, as we all get older, we want to downsize. It's not a bad thought. You know, it's not a bad idea. And it's not a bad idea to rent the property to have some positive cash flow. As long as it's not negative cash flow, it might be a good idea.
It'd be probably a positive cash flow of like $15,000 a year after paying, if I were to get like a property management company type of a thing, I think.
And so, is the location really good? I mean, do you think long term the values will keep going up?
They seem to. Yeah. Because it's in the close to Silicon Valley. So
Probably will. I can't. That's a good area to be in. I might want to hold on to it, Art. Might be a good way.
Yeah, I'm told it'd probably be a good idea to hold it. But
good luck.
I thought I'd give you a call.
I think it's a strong consideration. Yeah, to rent it out. I do. Art, appreciate the call. Thank you. Let's go to Tim in San Jose. How you doing, Tim?
Good. Oh, thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I have a question about XCO.
Okay, XCO Resources Inc.
Yeah.
Excuse me, I apologize. They're engaged in oil and natural gas exploration and production in East Texas, North Louisiana, and Appalachia. They are losing money. This is a penny stock. I would not go near it with your money. They're selling for, 69 cents a share. They've been going down steadily for well over a year. The sales are going down. They're not going to make any money this year. They're going to lose 27 cents a share this year. They're going to lose 26 cents a share last year. They have a huge payout, dividend payout of 29%. And, Tim, that's not going to last. They'll cut that. That's probably not even accurate. Okay, so I don't think you should consider it. I will say this. Management has been buyers of the stock since 2014. They've been buying those stock, but they own of a $188 million company. They only own 1%, so they haven't been buying very much, but they are buying it, and they have huge debt. So, Tim, I would not consider this one. It's very speculative. If you think you need to buy it, make sure you understand you're probably going to lose all your money. You may hit a big winner, but you'll probably lose. Chances are much higher you lose all your money. Thanks for the call, Tim. We're out of time for today. A reminder, I will be in San Jose on August 4th for additional portfolio reviews. These are first come, first serve appointments, everybody. So you can save your spot right now. Just go to investtalk.com and click on schedule a meeting. That's August 4th in San Jose. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley for Justin Klein and everyone at KPP Financial. Thank you for listening today and enjoy your evening. Let's do it again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.